This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. It's great to have you with us for the Wednesday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto, Personal Finance Wednesday. What do you do if you can't afford college right now? Also, how restaurants are preparing for the winter when outdoor dining is not exactly going to be an option. The report on durable goods that Elisa just mentioned provides the latest snapshot of the economy. Let's see what to make of it. Gus Fauché is here, Chief Economist at PNC Financial Services, based in Pittsburgh. Gus, what should we make out of this durable goods report?
This was a good, solid report. We saw durable goods orders and shipments both increase over the month. And it looks like businesses are starting to invest again after cutting back on their investment at the worst of the pandemic.
So for people who are maybe new to reports like this, kind of give us a thumbnail primer on what we find in the durable goods report.
Sure. So we saw total durable goods orders increase 11% from June to July, and we saw shipments up 7% over the month. But we also saw increases in business investment goods, so things like telecommunications equipment, IT equipment, that type of thing. And that's an indication that businesses are feeling a little bit more optimistic about the way things are going and are investing for the future.
And these are things that are designed to last for a while when these companies buy them?
That's right. So these are heavy equipment. It also includes commercial trucks, that type of thing. But these are generally heavy investment goods, and it's certainly a positive indication that businesses are looking forward to increased output in the future.
Let's talk about what the Fed may be looking at as we're trying to get the economy reopened throughout the country, looking for some help, I would imagine, in trying to figure out what to do in several local areas.
That's right. And so we have a big speech from Chair Powell tomorrow morning, and he is likely to say that the Fed is going to move towards what's called average inflation targeting. So they want inflation to average around 2%. It's been below 2%, and that means that they're shooting for inflation for a while of above 2%, and that means they're going to keep interest rates very low for an extended period of time. So that's good news for people who are looking for a car loan or looking to purchase a new home and are getting a 30-year fixed mortgage. And then it's also good news for businesses that are looking to invest. Their cost of borrowing to finance that investment is going to remain low for an extended period of time.
One of the things that we've talked about on the show before is the fact that Americans are saving more money. The ones who do have jobs aren't spending as much. Talk about the challenge of that, because it's good for people to have money in the bank, but then again, the money needs to be spent for the economy to get moving.
That's right. I mean, obviously, savings allows access to capital for businesses to invest and promotes long-run growth. But at the same time, consumer spending is about two-thirds of the U.S. economy. And if consumers are saving more, that means that they're spending less. So people got those one-time bonus payments in the spring. They've been getting unemployment insurance benefits. And then they're spending less because there's less money to spend on. They're not going on vacation. They're not flying. They're not going to hotels. They're going out to restaurants much less than they normally did. And so that's forced consumers to save. I think that we will see the savings rate decline, but I think consumers are going to be more cautious going forward, and that high savings rate, although it's good for long-run growth, is going to drag on the economy in the near term.
Thanks so much, Gus Fauché. He is chief economist at PNC Financial Services, based in Pittsburgh. Results of a small trial of a potential coronavirus vaccine are out, while a top doctor is weighing in on the possible length of the COVID crisis. We welcome back to the show Michelle Cortez, health reporter for Bloomberg News, based in Minneapolis. Michelle, what can we tell from this limited data that we have on this coronavirus vaccine trial?
Researchers are presenting some preliminary information about the Moderna vaccine to the CDC's vaccine committee talking about how effective it might be. And remember, these are very early data. We're talking about 10 people in one arm of the trial and 10 in another. But the thing is that these were elderly patients. These were people who were 71 and older. Of course, there was a younger cohort as well, 56 to 70. And what they showed is that the vaccine did actually produce what's called neutralizing antibodies in these people. And that's important because we believe that as, well, not we, but scientists believe that as you get older, your body's less likely to respond robustly to a vaccine. So the idea that it is producing infection-fighting antibodies in these older folks, good news.
When you hear about side effects, things like fatigue, you know, I'm tired or I get chills or headaches or something, is that considered something that would be a big negative for a vaccine, or does that just kind of go with any vaccine?
Whenever you're looking at a new product, you have to weigh the risks and the benefits. And for vaccines, it's particularly challenging because remember, you're giving this to somebody who has no symptoms at all and might not ever even encounter the virus. So you really do want it to be very effective. On the flip side, everyone is very nervous about coronavirus. You don't want to get it and you don't want to give it to anybody else who might be high risk. So if it's just going to be things like that you feel a little unwell, maybe your arm is a little bit sore, some rash, people can deal with those issues. It's the bigger side effects that we're worried about.
We have a former FDA chief saying that this looks like this is going to be a 2020 thing, and by next year, technology, medicine will get to a point where it may not be that the virus is gone, but at least the impact will be far different.
Yeah, and it's a great segue to the Moderna piece as well, because this is Dr. Scott Gottlieb, who used to head the Food and Drug Administration, and he's saying he really does think that this is going to be a 2020 thing, and that's for two reasons. Number one is because of vaccines like the one that's coming from Moderna and others also that we've talked about numerous times that are in development, but also we're going to get some really significant advances when it comes to testing. And of course, testing has been a huge problem in our country. We haven't been able to do it well enough to know exactly where the virus is. That's going to change. We're expecting to start getting large numbers of tests where you can spit into a tube, get the results there, things that work like a pregnancy test. Not that you're going to be able to do them at home at first, but you could go to, like, the nurse at school could do it. If you are in an office that has a nurse practitioner or someone there, your office could bring in people, and then you could get a test that's going to give you a result in 15 minutes. It could cost $1. It could cost $5. Once we start getting some of those tools, we're really going to make a difference here.
Which seems to change, then, the idea of needing to get the virus completely gone, completely eradicated, because that may never happen, frankly, but at least we'll be able to have these other things in place to be able to move forward. I won't say get back to normal, but at least move forward, especially economically.
It looks like our new normal might involve having coronavirus with us, and we have to just figure out a way to handle that and to keep it to manageable levels. I think that's what some of these folks are talking about. The vaccine is not going to be an immediate cure, as we've talked about before, and the testing will let you know where it is. In that particular regard, then we would be able to completely lock down people who are really in danger or be very safe with whomever is around them. And the more we get these tools, the better off we're going to be. But it doesn't mean that we're going to be able to get back to normal. It doesn't mean that we're going to be able to stop wearing masks or social distancing, at least not for the foreseeable future.
Thanks so much, Michelle Cortez, health reporter at Bloomberg News, based in Minneapolis. Up next, areas of the job market that are hot despite the overall economic slowdown.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
While unemployment remains high, there are certain jobs that are in demand. We're joined by Scott Sargis, founder and president of Strategic Search Corp here in Chicago. Scott, it's good to have you back on the show. I know I've been seeing a lot of construction going on. That didn't end. That was deemed essential. Are any of these jobs in the construction industry?
Yes. In fact, they're doing construction in our building today.
Yeah, it's all over.
Yeah. Civil engineering in general is growing despite all the cutbacks. Highway, tollway, and Illinois Department of Transportation projects are being funded. And as a result, I'm seeing five areas that are really hot today. One is structural engineers, particularly for bridge design. Second is wastewater treatment / water supply engineers. A third is construction phase resident engineers A fourth is CAD design, and particularly in the civil engineering field, they use MicroStation CAD. And probably the hottest of the five is traffic signal design. Those are the people that do the traffic studies, et cetera, before new traffic lights, et cetera, are put out. In fact, we're doing six searches right now. We're having a hard time finding good talent in those areas. So those are five of the key areas right now, Cisco.
Now, traffic signal design, why would that be hot? What would be going on in the economy that would make that something that is really in demand?
Well, a couple factors. One is, you know, when you're doing, a construction project, you need traffic signals, in order to navigate the chaos. A second is that, it's simple supply and demand. There's a lot of demand for these people and very short supply. I'll give you one example. One of our clients in Will County just opened a new office. It's their seventh office, and they're looking for someone that they can groom to be general manager. The office is small right now. It's only three people, a general manager, a senior tech, and a junior engineer. And they're looking for someone to build that practice. This would be somebody that would interface with municipal managers as well as directors of engineering and spec out all those projects. So those are a couple of reasons, Cisco, that this is a hot area right now.
So these are hot right now. So what would people do? And because, I mean, someone, if they want to be trained in this, if they want to go to school for it, they're not going to be ready tomorrow. Are these the sort of fields where, hey, even 5 to 10 years down the road, these might still be hot?
Well, let's say somebody wanted to make a transition. I would recommend going to a community college. Joliet Community College has a very good training program, and become a tech, get an associate's degree, become a tech. And a lot of these engineering construction firms need somebody. Start out as a tech, learn CAD, particularly MicroStation CAD. That's the hot computer-aided design or CAD system in the field of civil engineering today. And then use that as a leapfrog into maybe getting your engineering degree in civil engineering or mechanical engineering or structural engineering down the road. That's what I would recommend, especially if somebody wants to make a career transition, Cisco.
Thanks so much, Scott Sargis, founder and president of Strategic Search Corp. You can find them online at strategicsearch.com. Still ahead, Personal Finance Wednesday, strategies to pay for college during a time of economic unpredictability.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. Thanks for being with us. I'm Cisco Cotto. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Illinois Republicans say they're reaching out to communities of color. A GoFundMe page is collecting money for Jacob Blake, the black man shot by police officers in Kenosha. Personal Finance Wednesday, paying for college in a time of economic uncertainty. New face mask rules for restaurants in Illinois kick in today as owners put together plans for the fall and winter. WBBM Business, the Dow up just 5 points, the NASDAQ up 170, and the S&P is up 26 points. Oil is up 0.25%. Sunshine, blue skies all day long, a very hot day, high of 95. At times it will feel like 100 right now, 91 at O'Hare, 87 degrees downtown. Day two of the Republican National Convention included members of the Illinois GOP pledging more involvement with black and brown communities.
In two online sessions yesterday, the Illinois Republican Party highlighted African American and Latinx Party faithful Catalina Lauf, who along with her sister was featured in videos on both nights of the convention, says the party needs to do better.
I think Republicans in a lot of ways have not gone to these communities. You know, I remember, Republicans have not addressed the Hispanic community or marginalized communities.
Lauf lost to Jim Oberweis in the 14th Congressional District primary. Jesus Solario is the Republican candidate running to unseat Congressman Jesus Chuy Garcia, and he agrees with Lauf.
Once we start being more actively involved in these communities and not afraid to talk to communities across the state, then we can start changing that narrative.
A major push in the African-American community is already in the works. Covering the convention, Craig Delamore, News Radio 105.9 FM.
A GoFundMe fundraiser for Jacob Blake has raised nearly $1.5 million. He's currently being treated at a hospital near Kenosha after being shot by police over the weekend. One of his lawyers says a bullet damaged Blake's spine. He has several holes in his stomach and other injuries to the rest of his body. He's reportedly paralyzed from the waist down. The Kenosha Sheriff's Department plans a 1 p.m. news briefing. We'll bring that to you live here on News Radio. It's 12:32.
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The Noon Business Hour presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Markets are climbing. The Dow and S&P not doing much, but the NASDAQ up right about 1.5%. Let's talk about it with Gary Kaltbaum, president of Kaltbaum Capital Management, also a Fox News business contributor. His website is GaryK.com. Gary, always good to have you on the show. What do you make of what you're seeing on Wall Street today?
More the same. We've just been calling for a melt up in technology, and you're just seeing a narrow group of names just going, crazy to the upside. And now when you get Salesforce.com come out with magnificent numbers, all these software stocks are up big today. Some names are up 10%, and that's what you're seeing in the NASDAQ. We've seen a lot of these days in the last couple of months where the Dow was flat and the NASDAQ would be up 150. And the NASDAQ short term is stretched, extended, overbought, too much frothiness, but it keeps going, and I wouldn't be surprised if there's a lot more points to put on the scoreboard.
Do you think that there is legitimacy to it, in that are there underlying fundamentals that really support this, or is it all speculation?
I think it's a combination of two things. Chasing of money. In other words, because of the pandemic, airlines and cruise lines and energy stocks have been, and even financials have been dead money. And when these portfolio managers seeing all these tech stocks on the move, they tend to get away from one and go to the other. So it tends to feed on itself. But let's be clear, in technology, in internet, in stay at home, you have some companies with some gargantuan earnings and sales numbers. And over the long term, it's strong earnings and sales and the ability to keep growing them is what makes stocks go higher. So it's a combination of both. But leave no doubt, when I see a Salesforce.com with triple-digit earnings growth, that's some big stuff.
You have Netflix today up about 11.5%. What do you make of that?
Just another category killer. Our last quarter's earnings are up 165%, and the stock's been like dead for the last 7 weeks, and you never know when it's going to wake up, and they're just jumping all over it today. That is your big institutional crowd positioning themselves. Already volume is double the average daily volume, and that's what you want to see. That tells you the big money's jumping in. So again, just another name. Growth stocks are the place to be. Large cap growth stocks are the place to be. Smaller caps continue to lag.
And if people are putting their money in growth, does that mean you really don't have many people taking a defensive posture with their investing, even in the middle of a pandemic?
Correct. There is still a lot of cash on the sidelines, but if this continues, markets, that cash will come off. I will tell you one area we like, and we think probably hit a low here in the last couple of days, is gold. I think that's somewhat defensive, but it's also saying that our central banker continues to do nutty things as he prints trillions. So that's part of that equation. But look, the big theme is tech, internet, software, stay at home. It's been that way for a few months, and it looks like it's starting to just rev up again here today.
Do you foresee a pop if we get a vaccine finally, as we keep being told there's one on the horizon? Or do you think the idea of a vaccine is already baked into what we're seeing?
No, my thought process is simple. If we do get close to a vaccine or a vaccine, you want to own airlines and cruise lines and hotels and gaming, because they're the ones that are under-owned now and have been left for dead, because a lot of them just cruise lines aren't even cruising. Gaming, there's a low capacity, the same for hotels. If they ever get to half of normal, those stocks are probably 50 to 100% from here, but we still probably have a ways to go.
What would you advise someone if they're willing to take some of the risks, like we're talking about people taking, but they aren't necessarily willing to go all in on some of these risks?
I'd say, you know, probe a little bit. You know, if you have $100,000, you know, put $25,000 in and stay with where the strength is until it's not. You know, markets, you know, in spite of the pandemic are doing their thing. I think a lot of that central bank intervention, there's about $15 trillion printed between just Europe and the United States, but that's reality. And again, I deal with the here and now, and the here and now remains strong, especially for those areas I mentioned.
Thanks so much, Gary Kaltbaum. He is president of Kaltbaum Capital Management. You can find him online at GaryK.com. Just ahead, Personal Finance Wednesday, strategies for affording college in the midst of economic uncertainty.
Making sense of your dollars. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Personal Finance Wednesday, sponsored by Mesirow Wealth Management. The pandemic is creating issues for students trying to make plans for college. That worry extends to the financial side. Let's get some help from Frank Patsky, financial advisor at EP Wealth Advisors here in Chicago. Frank, there's really no way about it. I mean, this pandemic has created havoc for students wanting to get an education and wanting to be able to pay for it.
It's a little bit like playing whack-a-mole. I can't imagine what it's like being a student right now or a parent trying to find out if your school's open, if your classes are online, if they're in person, if the dorms are open, if they're going to close. It's just tough.
So for students trying to afford it, trying to actually take classes this fall, well, let's talk about some strategies for actually doing it. Let's begin with the FAFSA. One thing I've always wondered is when you file that thing, usually in January, is that rock solid, untouchable, or can you in any way make a change to it if your finances change?
No, in fact, I think most people, because it's not an easy thing to do, are thrilled when they have it done the first time and they want to forget about it and put it to bed. But this is a perfect example where there are opportunities to go back, amend, reapply, talk to aid counselors, and see if you have another opportunity to help yourself out at a difficult time.
And talking to the financial aid office, let's talk about that for a moment. I think a lot of people understand that they get that initial statement, here's how much financial aid you get. A lot of people don't think, though, that you can go back and negotiate.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly what it is. Now, college students' minds don't go there, although I think right now they're probably a little bit more inclined. Parents tend to think that way more, but I think that's the incentive that you should take. You should go in, make a point, sit down and talk, ask questions. What can be done to help me under these difficult times?
And can you literally, I mean, maybe you don't look at it like a negotiation, but can you literally tell the financial aid office, hey, I want to go to school here. I just need a little more help just to see what they can do.
Yeah, and it doesn't mean that it's going to work, but I think that they're proud of their universities. They're proud of their jobs. They're there to help you, and they want their universities to be successful and their students to be successful. So I think that they're willing to help you as much as they possibly can, although they're under a lot of duress right now as well.
Anything in the CARES Act, the stimulus and pandemic help that the federal government passed, anything there that might be a benefit to students?
Well, there are a couple of things. They don't all relate exactly to the CARES Act, but they've certainly stretched out over the course of the last 4 or 5 months, 6 months. The CARES Act provided some additional funds to universities that they can use directly to help students affected by the pandemic. So that's a resource that, again, you should go back and ask questions about. There's some forgiveness isn't the right word, but some postponing of payments on student loans. Everyone wants to try to make this work. So Congress is doing their best. Schools are doing their best. I know the kids and the parents don't feel like it, but it's asking questions, it's talking, it's communicating.
Given the financial uncertainty and frankly, just the anxiety of trying to go to school in a pandemic, is a gap year ever a good idea?
That's a really good and tough question. You know, I think this is the time to consider it. You can get your ducks in a row. Maybe you can find a job to generate some additional money. You can go live at home with your parents, save some money by doing that. But there's also not just a school of thought, but academic and research that shows that you might lose momentum by taking that year off. You may never go back and therefore not have the earning capacity that school degree would warrant. So that's a tough one. That really needs some thought and discussion again with family, friends, and those in the education community.
Yeah, careful consideration for sure. Thanks for all the advice. That is Frank Patsky, financial advisor at EP Wealth Advisors here in Chicago. That's Personal Finance Wednesday. Join us at this time tomorrow for Technology Thursday. Still to come, the restaurant industry scrambles to put together a plan for the colder months when outdoor dining won't really work. Restaurants have become creative in the pandemic, but the upcoming winter will present even greater challenges. We welcome Frank Ruffalo, managing partner at Il Cullicino here in Chicago. Frank, it's good to have you back on the show. Before we talk about what you may need to do in the winter, let's talk about what you have done this summer in order to stay open and serve customers. What kind of changes have you made?
Well, obviously, at the beginning of the season, we had a fully retractable roof going in, and that was meant to function as our private event space. We're lucky we had it because that's really been our main dining room. People are really hesitant to sit inside still. Besides that, you know, our capacity is severely decreased. We're making sure everything's spaced out. All the tables are sanitized, menus are sanitized, and then obviously a bunch of protective gear for our staff, you know, face shields, masks, stuff like that.
And so as you move toward the winter, you're not going to either not able to do outdoor at all, or at least certainly not in the same way.
Yeah, we're pretty concerned about that. Il Cullicino does have the roof, like I was saying, but some of our other locations are just, you know, straight patio, you know, on the sidewalk. So we're very concerned. We're hoping that people will, one, kind of brave the weather, two, hope that we get a very mild fall, as we've been lucky with this summer so far. But we're just trying to pivot as fast as we can, get some outdoor heaters, and just hope that people will support us with carryout. And still, even if it's a nice, you know, day where it's 50 and sunny, that some people will be willing to come out and eat on the patio.
And so even if you get heaters, you still got to reduce capacity over the winter months?
Yep, absolutely. And with the roof, when we close that roof, that takes us down to 25% capacity because now it is an indoor space. So it's going to severely limit the headcount even more, where it might not be feasible someday. So we're hoping that, one, there might be some changes in the city mandates. And two, just like we were saying, that hopefully people still support with carryout and they remember to call the restaurant to place the orders, not use third-party services. And just remember that your local businesses are there to serve you, and we're ready. We're taking any precaution we can to make you feel safe when you come in.
Yeah, I'm sure it's been great just to serve customers and as a business owner just to get some kind of cash flow. But talk about the challenge for a restaurant owner, tight margins. You really need a certain amount of capacity in order to make money.
Absolutely. When you go and you do your preliminary business plan, you don't ever think that you're going to have a 5,000 square foot restaurant and you're going to have 25% seating on that. Those numbers don't work out. So it's very, you know, hesitant at this time to see what changes to make and how to make that function. You know, you're cutting menu items, you're eliminating some staff because you don't want to, you know, have too many people in there when they're not needed. So there's a lot of changes we're making, and we're hoping that, you know, we just make it through this and people come out, support, and remember that, you know, these restaurants are on very thin margins as it is. So to reduce our capacity where, you know, you're at a quarter of the occupancy, those numbers don't always work out.
Thanks for being with us. That is Frank Ruffalo, managing partner at Il Cullicino here in Chicago, talking about the challenge that restaurants have as they have to think about outdoor seating in the winter months.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.